This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. The World Health Organization on Wednesday declared mpox a global public health emergency for the second time in 2 years, following an outbreak of the viral infection in the Democratic Republic of Congo that has spread to neighboring countries. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
Mpox, which is usually mild, can spread through close contact and in rare cases be fatal. It causes flu-like symptoms and pus-filled lesions on the body. The outbreak in the Congo began with the spread of an endemic strain known as clade I. But a new variant, clade IB, appears to spread more easily through routine close contact, including sexual contact. It has spread from the Congo to neighboring countries including Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, and Uganda, triggering the action from the WHO. Tedros said on Wednesday that the WHO had released $1.5 million in contingency funds and plans to release more in the coming days.
That was Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. The United States and key mediators Egypt and Qatar are intensifying efforts to push Israel and Hamas toward a ceasefire deal. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wittes-Kuswala has this report.
Talks are scheduled Thursday in Doha, the capital of Qatar. Hamas, a U.S.-designated terror group, is signaling it will not attend. Hamas political officer Osama Hamdan said the group expects to be told by the mediators that Israel has accepted what is being offered, and any meeting should be based on talking about implementation mechanisms and setting deadlines, rather than negotiating something new. On Wednesday, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre projected confidence that talks will happen. Patsy Wittes-Kuswala, VOA News, Washington.
About half of all homes and businesses in Puerto Rico were without power Wednesday as Hurricane Ernesto moved north into the warm waters of the Atlantic after dumping torrential rain on the U.S. territory. This is VOA News. More than 725,000 homes and businesses on the island were without electric service out of a total of about 1.5 million customers. That's according to the Caribbean island's main power supplier. Puerto Rico's power grid is notoriously fragile. In 2022, Hurricane Fiona knocked out power for about 80% of the island's homes and businesses for as long as a month. UNICEF says children in West and Central Africa are increasingly exposed to extreme heat, leading to increased health concerns. In a new report published Wednesday, the UN Children's Agency says the frequency of heat waves in the region has more than quadrupled since the 1960s, leaving children more vulnerable to developing chronic conditions and contracting infectious diseases that spread in high temperatures, such as mosquito-borne malaria and dengue. The report comes as West Africa experienced an unprecedented heat wave earlier this year that led to a surge of deaths in the region. Some elephants from Namibia are getting a new home across the border in Angola after conservationists realized the animals needed a new habitat to survive. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
The Kwatir Game Reserve in southeastern Angola was known for its bustling elephant population during colonial times. But the 27-year war between Angola's government and UNITA rebels, which ended in 2002, led to every last elephant in the reserve being killed. Reserve owner Stefan van Wyk is working to reintroduce the jumbos to the 40,000-hectare game reserve. He is getting the elephants from Mount Echo Reserve in Namibia, where 7 years of persistent drought has decreased forage and grazing land for a herd of 50 elephants. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
U.S. film actress Jenna Rollins has died at the age of 94. Rowland received acclaim for her performances of vulnerable women in films directed by her late husband, John Cassavetes, among them A Woman Under the Influence and Gloria, for which she was nominated for Academy Awards, and Faces. She was later praised for her role as an elderly woman suffering from Alzheimer's in the 2004 romantic drama The Notebook, directed by her son, Nick Cassavetes. She was awarded an honorary Academy Award for her career achievements in 2015. Nick Cassavetes revealed earlier this year that his mother had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's 5 years earlier. Follow us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at VOAnews.com, as well as on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter, and download our VOA News app. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Thursday, August 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Fresh U.S.-led peace talks to end Sudan's civil war are underway in Geneva.
From the onset, I think that the potential for these talks to generate optimism is very limited. One reason is the absence of one of the parties to the conflict.
UN officials say Sudan is at a breaking point. Botswana and the U.S. address challenges facing women in the military. 9 Liberian public employees are recommended for dismissal for insulting the president. The Speaker of Nigeria's parliament withdraws a controversial bill.
Bill is evil, draconian. If it has been passed, it will make Nigeria to be like a country where democracy does not have a place.
And the economy is a key issue for voters in the U.S. state of Wisconsin. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Fresh U.S.-led peace talks aimed at ending Sudan's 16-month war started in Geneva on Wednesday, although neither warring side attended. The army said several days ago that it would boycott the talks, while Rapid Support Forces, the RSF delegation, went to Switzerland, but at the last minute said they would stay away. Fighting between the army and the RSF has killed thousands, driven about 10 million people from their homes, and it sparked what the United Nations has called the world's worst hunger crisis. Brian Adeba is the Deputy Director of Policy at the Sentry, an organization that tracks corruption and human rights violations in Africa. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that he is not optimistic about the success of these latest talks in bringing about a ceasefire.
From the onset, I think that the potential for these talks to generate optimism is very limited. One reason is the absence of one of the parties to the conflict, and that is the Sudanese Armed Forces, the SAF. Burhan, the leader of the SAF, has said he won't attend the talks and placed a precondition, basically, that unless the RSF evacuates from all the areas that it has occupied since the start of the war, there will be no talks with the RSF for the moment.
Given the level of suffering in Sudan, which the UN now describes as the worst crisis in the world, and given that there are many countries involved led by the U.S., is there a way the two belligerents, the two parties, can be brought together?
Yes, there is a way that these belligerents can be brought to the negotiating table. And it is not so much about convincing them to show up. It's really convincing the external actors that are involved in this conflict to pull the ropes of leverage on the sides in the conflict so that they can attend the peace talks. And here we're talking about the role of the United Arab Emirates. Its support for the RSF has been widely documented by even the UN panel of experts. We know that the Sudanese regime itself, the Sudanese armed forces, receive support from Iran, from Egypt, and to some extent from Turkey. So all these external actors need to be brought into the peace process. Otherwise, the chances or possibility of any breakthrough remain limited without their involvement.
What do you think is the fate of the talks? Will they be helpful? Because, as you say, these external participants are not being pressed hard enough.
In terms of resolving the underlying issue or even securing the basic minimum required, which is a ceasefire, the talks will not amount to much. But I think the utility of these talks is political signaling. It shows that the international community is very much involved and would like to see a peaceful resolution to the conflict, and that the onus is on the parties to the conflict to play their part. So this, in a way, adds political pressure on both sides in the conflict, and even with on their external backers. In the end, the resolution to this conflict will happen only at the negotiating table. So in terms of signaling, I think that is important. And then you have the United Nations General Assembly coming up in September, and the Security Council is likely to also sort of bring this up in its discussions. So this sends a wider signal to the wider international community that the sides in the Sudanese conflict need to sort of change their perspective and come to the negotiating table.
Brian Adeba is the Deputy Director of Policy at the Century, an organization that tracks corruption and human rights violations in Africa. He spoke from Ontario, Canada, with VOA's Douglas Mpuga. UN officials say Sudan is at a breaking point. As talks began in Geneva, the medical charity Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, said the besieged Sudanese city of El Fasher may have to shut down due to intensive bombardment. Nicholas Hesam, the special representative of the Secretary General and the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, briefed the Security Council Wednesday about South Sudan and the indirect impact of the Sudan conflict.
A perfect storm is gathering in South Sudan as regards its humanitarian and economic outlook. This is reflected by a protracted humanitarian crisis founded on chronic food insecurity, a spillover of the Sudan conflict into South Sudan, resulting in the movement so far of 750,000 refugees and internally displaced people, uncertainties in the face of critical political events necessary for a peaceful transition, a rapidly deteriorating economy exacerbated by the rupture in critical oil infrastructure and oil revenue, and the potential for once-in-a-lifetime flooding in September. Any one of these elements on its own presents a significant challenge. When taken together, it could push the country to a tipping point.
Nicholas Hesam is the special representative of the Secretary General and the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan. Military personnel from the United States and the Botswana Defense Force are wrapping up workshops aimed at strengthening relations as well as building the capacity of local forces. One workshop is focusing on better integrating women into Botswana's army, addressing issues like sexual harassment and the need for tailored equipment. From Habaroni, Nkudise Dube reports.
This workshop in Habaroni falls under an initiative led by the U.S. Army Southern European Task Force Africa, known as SETAF-AF, to better address the role of women serving their countries. SETAF-AF Military Operations Officer Major Tasha Barnes says women in the military face challenges that could potentially limit the roles they play. She says the objective of the exchanges with the U.S. and Botswana Defense Force soldiers is to find out how to overcome these hurdles.
One of the big challenges is letting women open or broaden their horizons and putting them into a box on things that they can't do. Other challenges is not letting women rise to the occasion. We have made several changes in the U.S. over the last 10 to 15 years to accommodate women based on body type with changes in uniform, just to help women feel more comfortable within the military.
Barnes elaborated on concerns surrounding army uniforms, for example, and military equipment.
They've all given their perspective on the changes of uniforms, such that in the U.S. we also had issues with the fit, improper fit and wear of our vests when it came to shooting and injuring females instead of helping us. Another issue we had 10 years was the learning that women didn't weigh enough to actually properly break in boots. So by giving these lessons learned to Botswana, we're hoping that they will kind of learn from some of our mistakes to prevent injuries to the women.
Local Army Major P. Sergio acknowledged that women in the Army still face challenges. Sergio voiced hope that interactions with the U.S. Army will prove helpful.
In our culture, men were believed that women cannot join the army because it's tough and we are soft, we are not masculine. People are not always ready or they are not quick to change. So it's something that it will take time for everyone to accept that women have joined the army and they are doing good.
The U.S. ambassador to Botswana, Howard Van Franken, says it is essential to afford women equal opportunities in the military.
is the kind of an approach to problem solving that incorporates everyone's strengths and enables us to bring everyone into the equation on an equal basis. I think it's absolutely essential that in order to tackle the problems that we face in the 21st century in security, we need everyone to contribute.
The CTAF AF workshop coincides with the broader initiative known as Southern Accord 2024, aimed at strengthening bilateral military capabilities. The CTAF AF Deputy Commanding General, Brigadier General John LeBlanc, said this year's Southern Accord exercise, which drew 700 military personnel, has been a success.
The importance of Southern Accord is really about building an enduring partnership and relationship between the United States and Botswana militarily. And Southern Accord itself is an opportunity to improve joint readiness, interoperability, and cooperation, and, you know, all while demonstrating, you know, strong military bonds that exist between our two countries.
The bilateral exercises end Thursday. Kondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 15th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Speaker of Nigeria's House of Representatives has withdrawn a controversial bill that he had introduced in Parliament. A spokesperson for Speaker Abbas Tajudeen said in a statement that the Speaker acknowledges the attention the legislation has generated and will never support any action that might disrupt the peace and the unity of the nation. According to the Nigeria Vanguard news site, the counter-subversion bill would have imposed up to 10 years in jail for refusing to recite the national anthem, destroying the national symbols, and defacing places of worship. Paluola Adewale is the national mobilization officer of what he calls the Pro-Labor Joint Action Front. He tells me that Speaker Tajudeen bowed to threats of new nationwide protests.
My first reaction is that it shows the power of the people to force government to retract from their anti-people's policy if people will resist those policies. That's my first reaction, as well against the background of the recent nationwide protest. The government is highly unpopular. They know this. And also, the idea behind the bill, in first instance, is to further stifle the democratic space. The bill is evil, draconian. If it has been passed, it will make Nigeria to be like a country where democracy does not have a place. And of course, it's a bill that wants to criminalize dissent, that wants to criminalize right to freedom of assembly, and they want to criminalize the right to freedom of expression. And that's what the bill wants to achieve.
If you look at it on the surface, before it was withdrawn, the speaker, some of his ideas were that if you destroy a national symbol or refuse to recite the national anthem, there will be consequences. Don't you think they are good?
No, national symbol, it does not have any base in reality, because it's not a common feature for national symbol to be destroyed. So that there's no basis for it in the first instance. On the last anthem, you cannot force me to recite an anthem because people are not happy. This is a country that flows with the majority are living in mass poverty. Not that Nigerians don't love the country, they do, but that they're not happy with the ruling elite, which also impose an anthem on them. Because they just exhumed an old anthem, brought it back as a new one. And that's why, as a protest, many Nigerians don't recite it as a form of protest against the government. And of course, at the last national protest, at protest grant, people used to recite the now old national anthem as a symbol of protest or resistance against the government, which has further impoverished them, despite the enormous wealth of Nigeria.
Do you agree with the speaker in withdrawing the bill? He says that he doesn't want to be a part of anything that disrupts the peace and unity of Nigeria.
Already was part of it, you know, in the Speaker of the House, the number three element in the government. He would have conceived the bill, for instance, without the support of the top HLU on the hierarchy of the government, including President Tinubu. Which, of course, the first of the last protest showed that there's a budding dictatorship in Nigeria. Of course, because of resistance against that, because of the resistance against social media, and also it means that that can translate to another mass protest on the ground. That's why he withdrew it. In first instance, it's evil to have conceived, in first instance, such a deal that want to criminalize dissent, that want to criminalize freedom of expression and freedom of assembly.
Peluola Adewale is the National Mobilization Officer of what he calls the Pro-Labor Joint Action Front. He was speaking with us from Lagos. The Director of Liberia Civil Service Agency, the CSA, has recommended the dismissal of 9 employees of the Monrovia City Corporation for insulting President Joseph Boakai on Facebook. As Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia, some are expressing concern that freedom of expression is under attack by the Boakai administration.
The Monrovia City Corporation sacked 9 employees on Wednesday as demanded by CSA boss Josiah Jokai during his news conference on Tuesday. Boy Kokoi is one of the 9 dismissed employees. He denies insulting the president on Facebook. He said he and the other 8 were terminated because they are supporters of the Opposition Coalition for Democratic Change, CDC.
Hearing my name today as one of the employees, part of the 9 staff on social media insulting the presidency, it took me by surprise. It is clear that I'm a sedition. Even while in active political activities, to say I wrote on social media or making comments on the radio insulting the president, this is lie. This is false. This is misleading. No evidence whatsoever anywhere. For me, it's sad for me. I just feel for my 2 children, my 2 kids. Where am I going to start from? Why are you wishing a young man like me?
However, CSA boss Jokai noted there are policies that govern government employees, and posting denigrating statements on Facebook about the president is contrary to those guidelines.
It's by law and policy. So we have the Act establishing the Civil Service Agency of 1973, and we have all the policies and regulations that we promulgated. They are available at the CSA. It's not opinion. We're not talking about if you work for an entity, your behavior and your actions have to be compatible with the status. So let me turn it the other way around. When you work for the entity, do you engage in acts that undermine the work or harm the reputation of the entity? There are handbooks that you follow.
Michael Joseph is the executive director of the Center for Media Studies and Peace Building, Freedom of Expression and Media Advocacy. He told the VOA that the dismissed employees should have been given due process.
As an advocate for freedom of expression, we believe that everyone should be able to freely express themselves and take responsibility for the abuse thereof, as enshrined in our laws. But equally so, every institution has their own human resource manual. Meaning insults on the president, it shouldn't be summarily dismissed. Not as an advocate for freedom of expression, we in no way support that. You make an opinion, maybe express some dissatisfaction on the performance of the government or officials of the government, doesn't warrant a dismissal. They should be taking the task under the laws. They should be given an opportunity to exonerate themselves, give them due process.
The incident has generated mixed reaction among Liberians. Some government officials expressed dissatisfaction. Others are concerned the Boakai administration is doing the same thing they once criticized as part of the opposition. For Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
The United States said Wednesday it was appalled by reports that Tanzanian police used excessive force when it rounded up several opposition members over a banned youth rally this week. The French news agency AFP reports that the leaders of the main opposition party Chadema, including Chairman Freeman Mbowe, his deputy Tundu Lissu, and their supporters were arrested ahead of Monday's planned youth event in the southwestern city of Mbeya. Rights groups and government opponents have criticized the arrest, saying they fear it could signal a return to efforts to intimidate the opposition ahead of national elections next year. Ugandan police said that death toll from a landslide at a vast garbage dump in Uganda's capital, Kampala, last week has risen to 26, while 39 people remain missing. Late on Friday, a mountain of garbage collapsed at a landfill site on the outskirts of Kampala, burying dozens of homes as people slept. As of Sunday, the death toll stood at 21. Wisconsin is one of three states in the Midwest both Republicans and Democrats view as critical to their presidential campaigns. VOA's Midwest correspondent Kane Fairbow looked at what's motivating voters as campaigning in the state ramps up.
When VOA met Wisconsin restaurant owner Gonzalo Perez in 2017, he expected a big boost in business.
It's my lottery ticket.
That's because Taiwanese company Foxconn planned to build a massive flat-screen manufacturing facility not far away. Employing as many as 13,000 workers, Perez thought might frequent his restaurant. But Perez's dreams and Foxconn's plans didn't meet reality. Today, Foxconn's scaled-back southern Wisconsin facility employs fewer than 1,000 people.
The promise never was done.
Instead of a busy restaurant filled with customers, Perez is dealing with empty tables, staff shortages, and rising costs due to inflation.
Economy is really bad for us.
I think that the real key when people go to vote in many cases is how do I deal with rising costs?
Bob Wicke is a Republican representative in Wisconsin's State Assembly, whose current district is near both Perez's restaurant and the Foxconn facility. While the economy is a top issue for voters, he hears even more frustration with what they see as a lack of bipartisan cooperation among lawmakers.
That we don't work together. I hear from both parties. You're not getting anything done.
Nick Ramos is the executive director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, which he says is a bipartisan organization dedicated to good government in Wisconsin. The organization recently participated in a successful effort to change state legislative district maps in Wisconsin. Voters he talks to express concern about the future of U.S. democracy.
My hope is that no matter who ends up taking the Oval Office, it will be somebody that actually engages the people and actually wants to try and do everything to not only safeguard democracy, but find ways to make it better.
Wisconsin is a state as divided as any in the country, but what both Democrats and Republicans here can agree on is that succeeding in the presidential election in this state in November depends on how well they can get their voters to turn out.
So, Wisconsin, today I ask you, are you ready to get to work?
Recent polling in Wisconsin indicates Democratic nominee Vice President Kamala Harris has a narrow lead over Republican nominee, former President Donald Trump.
A vote for Trump is a vote to save Wisconsin and is a vote to save your country.
Restaurant owner Gonzalo Perez hasn't attended political events and hasn't met either candidate.
Lifestyle never change. It don't matter who gets it. I got to keep working 7 days a week, same schedule. I pay taxes regular. I don't see no benefit.
Perez says one thing above all will determine how he'll make his decision.
Sometimes I vote for whoever I think is going to be a change.
Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Madison, Wisconsin.
And that's it for this Thursday, August 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton, Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do. Presents the latest news about Africa and the world and its news summaries. Africa in Brief airs every day at 400,
500 or 600 UTC. Give us 5 minutes of your time to be brought up to date. Africa in Brief, your trusted source.